You could call this movie, "This Lady Does Not Have Everything She Needs."
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Let me go, you son of a bitch! Oh,
now that's no way to speak about me, mother. Bless her greedy soul.
Hello, everybody!
What's up?
Hello, everybody. This is a different Recotopia episode today. I can't wait to get into it, but Recotopia episode 36. The big recommend today is Leprechaun 3, but really, really, there's another 3 that we're big recommending today, and it's Marlowe 3, the album coming out, I believe, October 28th, if I'm not mistaken. That is the real big recommend. We're going to be talking to the people, the wonderful people behind Marlowe 3, L'Orange and Solemn Brigham, for most of this episode. And then we're going to get into Leprechaun 3. That's right. Ooh. What an episode. What I can't wait to get into this. Hello, everybody out there in the chat. I'm glad that you're coming in to join us today. This should be a lively one. So let's get into it, guys. L'Orange, Solemn, glad you could be here today. Can't wait to get into talking about this album that you guys have done. I've listened through it about 3 or 4 times. I think it's better than your first two, actually. And this Past Life song, both Jeremy and I have heard it, gone through it about, I don't know, he's probably listened to it more than I have, but I've listened to it quite a lot. So tell us about the collaborative process, how you guys got into all this, and now how you at a third album at this point.
Hey, yo, it's your man Silent Brigham. me and L'Orange, making music for a long time. Where I'm from, music is just kind of a thing that you do. When I went to school, it's just something I carried with me. And eventually some of my music got to L'Orange, and he reached out to me, and we linked up, man, at this wild ass place, this wild trap house where he was living at the time. And at first it was kind of rocky, you know, we ain't really hit it off. But he did tell me, you know, he was the first person to tell me I could do this for a living, you know, and I had something different. Made me believe in myself. And he threw me on a project that he was working on. And he told me about this dream that he had. And later on, we was able to make it come into fruition.
First of all, I love that you guys just number them and don't come up with fancy titles for the albums, because it feels, the music really does feel like a progression. Like you two are evolving together. And I agree with Chris. This is my favorite. I loved your first two albums, but this one, it just feels like there's so much depth here. When you write, I'm a songwriter, a bad one. You're not going to hear my music, but I'm very curious about your collaborative process, and whether there's a set way, or whether you guys kind of go back and forth on, like, Solemn, do you bring some kind of lyrics, and then L'Orange, you find some, you put some music to it, or do you go in reverse, or does it just kind of depend on the song?
Yeah, every song is different. I mean, there could be a time where I give him some lyrics, but for the most part, you know, I'll be inspired by whatever he's creating, and you know, I'll come up with something from there. He'll hear it, and we critique it from there. If we're in the studio together, I mean, anything's possible. You know, he could just be making a loop at the time, you know, and I could be freestyling in the background and he's getting inspired that, switching the beat up. If we're distanced, then it's usually him sending me something, me sending it back, we listening to it, and going from there.
Awesome.
And normally it builds on top of itself, you know, and so the kind of like process that I've always had is, you know, you structure something as a skeleton, you know, and then you keep adding to that over and over, you know, and then by the end of it, you're taking things away, you're polishing it up, but it's already been through the process of, you know, getting polished and getting ready to be an actual song by the time, you know, it's time to actually be like looking at releasing it.
Are you, you guys live close? How often are you able to be in the studio together to write? Does distance keep you guys remote too often, or
it's closer now than it was when I was in Seattle? It was tough. You know, we had to fly him out and everything. But I'm in Asheville, North Carolina now. I'm back in North Carolina where I belong, and he's in Wilmington where I'm from. And so we're
in the mountains. I'm by the coast. We both in the Great Sea.
It's drivable now. You know, I got to see him more for when we were making these songs than in the previous ones, which was, you know, nice. Mostly awesome. We just like smoke and make beats, and he just freestyles, and then we play Tekken, and then we, you know, play, and then we do it some more. And then by the end of it, like, you know, we just have some, like, not really songs. We just kind of have some good energy.
It's a real collaborative process, because a lot of times I think to myself, man, I don't know what the hell inspired him to come up with that shit. I don't know where that came from, but now it's my turn, and I got to throw some shit on it. Yeah.
I have a feeling, LaRange, you have, like, this incredible collection of old radio plays just on your computer somewhere with all these different like dialogue things that keep coming up. I always keep thinking, oh, it must be some old movie that you probably do it with movies too. You never do it with movies. Mm-hmm. It's always radio plays, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm always like trying to guess if that's an actor I know or anything. And it could be,
Because a lot of the old radio stuff was serialized from TV and from movies. And so, you know, when I say I've never taken it from a movie, what I mean is I've never taken it from a movie, but that doesn't mean that it didn't maybe appear in a movie. Like,
right.
Old entertainment was pretty all over the place in terms of like, they might have a TV show and then they'll just put the audio from that TV show on a vinyl and be like, yeah, you know, it plays. Like, and so I love these. They're actually not on my computer. They're all on vinyl around here. And so,
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I just have a gigantic collection of like oddities and weird radio stuff that I always really like. And so, yeah, no, if I find one that I've never seen before, I scoop it up. So
that's awesome. Where do you, go trolling record stores for that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, normally they have like a category that's called like miscellaneous or like, you know, or maybe oddities or radio or comedy or kids or stuff. You know, and so I normally go to those sections. It's funny, record stores are really only fall into two categories of that section. It's people that price those based off of how many people want them, which is like the ones I like, because that means they're all like $1, $2, whatever. And then there are those that price them based off of their rarity, which is like you'll go into these things and they'll be like $40 a piece. And I'm like, come on. Nobody but me is buying these. Like, what? Why on earth would you do this? Like, I can't.
Do they have to be a certain year old, like, to like avoid copyright issues and stuff?
I don't really worry about that with those as nearly as much, because they don't print, you know, weird stuff like that on vinyl anymore. You know, and they kind of stopped doing it in the 80s. You'll see some from in the 80s. You'll see like Escape to Witch Mountain, I think, is an example where I might just be like blown on my spot a little bit. But I distinctly remember using that one at one point and being like, this is a little strange that this is on vinyl in the first place. But
interesting. But you manipulate a lot of the audio.
Yeah.
Not just the dialogue, but some of the music, like sometimes it feels to me like there's radio play organ music like that you have manipulated forward or backward or stretched. How often, do you do that on every song for the most part? Take some piece of audio and then reinterpret it?
I mean, that's my whole job, you know, is being able to take, largely even my job as a whole, and including songwriting and working with producer or working with artists, rappers, vocalists, is taking something that already exists and reinterpreting it, thinking of it in terms of its possibilities. And in terms of, I like to try to really emphasize the create part of the word creativity, where you are never stuck in what something already is, you know? And so, in sampling and taking records and modifying those is a great exercise for that, because you can, if you start thinking in terms of what something already is, you're going to make really bad music, or you're just going to basically just be taking people's music, which I'm not a fan of. So, it's core to creativity is to imagine something in a way that it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There seems to be kind of a theme in the lyrics maybe that I've picked up in the, like the three or four listens, on this. Could you talk about, is there a theme to this album? Or are all the songs kind of like, I don't know, just they're their own thing?
You know, behind the excitement that we try to put in front, yeah, there is a underlying sense of, you know, getting what you deserve, becoming whole again. A lot of the lines I take from my life and I take from LaRonge's life. And, you know, we've been through a lot of dark places individually and together. So a lot of what you hear is that story. A lot of what you hear is how I feel, and my view in the world, and me also speaking for LaRonge, me trying to be his vocal piece and us together. But in your face, what you're going to hear, if, you know, you've never heard of Marlo, if you're just, say, hearing one of our ads or something like that, you're going to be excited. You're going to hear some music that pops. Underneath that, if you start listening, yeah, you know, I hope you can get a piece of it that you can take and it can be meaningful to you. But I definitely put our lives into these raps.
I was just going to say the song Past Life seems to have lyrics about, you know, people who are represent themselves one way, but aren't doing the aren't really living the life that they claim that they are, and things of that nature. So there's talking about hands up and then hands out. So there's like a lot of people who are asking for things they don't deserve. Maybe, I don't know. There's something kind of like that, kind of that, or just correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, really getting in the past life, I was speaking about, I guess, a specific duality of living in hip hop and living in the streets, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of people transition from, you know, not having a normal 9-to-5, so to speak, into music. You know, it's like a common thing. For a lot of people, music is just like a dream, you know, like some Disneyland thing. As soon as I make it, I'll pop off. And mm-hmm. I can say living in both sides, it was my attempt at trying to give my perspective, some of the things that I've noticed and some of the things that I've been through going throughout the game. But let everybody know that it ain't sweet, you know, but it is. It is very sweet.
I was actually going to ask about Past Life specifically, so I'm glad that you brought that up, Chris. When you say, imagine all the numbers if we hit the same crowd, who are you talking to? Are you talking to yourself, your past self, or are you talking to, actually just answer, I won't speculate, who are you talking to there?
Yeah, so I'm talking to myself, and I'm talking to anybody that might decide to set foot in the rap game. If you're hearing this, I'm talking to you. And also there's a conversation going on between me and myself, trying to decide, you know, how I want to finish the rest of my life. You know, do I want to live it in the past, or do I want to move forward with this new venture? You know, it's me going back and forth and also talking to you. If you're deciding to jump into the game, you know, you could decide for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys have a tour coming up, right? You're going overseas to Europe, a lot of UK dates. I guess you're going to hang out with James Acaster again. talk to us about that tour. Are you excited for any specific cities? I'm curious if you guys are going to have any dates in the US at some point so that, you know, we get a chance to see you guys perform, but obviously Europe must love you.
Oh yeah. I'm hyped for all the cities. I'm hyped for all the cities in the UK and the places we haven't been to. You know, a lot of the news comes fast, so I can't say exactly which places we're going to that we've been before. But I know a lot of people have been reaching out to me and noticed that I'm coming back to their city. And so I'm really hyped to go back there and, you know, show them what else we got, you know, show them what else Marlo can do. You know what I mean?
Those countries we haven't, you know, like one thing about touring that I've always really enjoyed is going to these places where English isn't the first language, where most people, you know, people in Europe kind of speak it because it's the business language over there, but going to places, you know, and that's something that I have really enjoyed in the past by myself, and that's something I'm really enjoying sharing with Solemn, just because it's not something that, you know, it's not the most complicated thing, but it's not something everybody experiences, to like be in a place where people don't speak your language. It's like, you know, it's a nice, it's an interesting feeling that not everyone experiences.
You feel like, I mean, I imagine if you feel like those crowds are connecting to the music as much or more and the flow as they are the lyrics, right?
Oh, man, I'll feel this real quick, because Solomon and I haven't played in a country where they don't speak English primarily. We mostly only played in the UK last time.
But oh, okay.
I will tell you, from my experience, those people know the lyrics.
Okay.
I don't really know how. And like, sometimes that can be a little bit of a problem, because they don't always speak the language. Mm. And so like, I don't know. I've heard stories about, like, you know, people singing along with, you know, the N word or something like that, where they don't know what they're doing. You know, where it'll be like in Russia, where like the language is so divorced from, you know, the culture that, you know, but
please anyway, don't go to Russia.
But in a much more, but yeah, we're going to Poland, but in a much lighter context, it's really fun to see people that don't speak English phonetically following those things. That's something I'm really looking forward to experience with Saul. Also, people that don't speak English love to rap at your face.
Man, I'm finna get rapped at. I'm finna get rapped at him. I mean, for me, I know that they're getting something that I never expected, because a lot of my lyrics, a lot of stuff we talk about, we're coming at it from our perspective as Americans living in the South. You know, a lot of it is very specific. And to me, I know that maybe they're pulling something different. Like, in Past Life, for example, when I say, even though you made it with your quips, you better have a clip, you know, I don't know if they're directly gonna know that I'm talking about gun violence here, you know? Mm-hmm.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's not as big in other places, but it makes me appreciate it on a whole nother level, because they're getting something that I never even considered out of it. And maybe some of that is relevant to them in their lives, you know? So awesome. Connected.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how much I can talk about other things on this album, but there is one that I wanted to talk about, a couple of things. First off, you collaborated with several other people on this as well. There's several other rappers that you collaborated with. And is there a point where, so I imagine the dynamic between you two has gotten to a comfortable point, maybe. I don't know. That's probably the stupid way to say it. But
yeah,
what happens when you bring other people in?
Oh, I mean, yeah. When it comes to me and LaRange, man, yeah, the time that we spent, we argue, we go back and forth. I'm not afraid of him and he ain't afraid of me. He'll say whatever, nice. You know, and I'll say whatever. And that allows us to be completely creative. When it comes to bringing somebody else in the mix, because, you know, he does what he does and I do what I do, when we're finished with what we've created, there's rarely times where we need something extra. There's rarely times where, like, hey, you know, who would be hot on this? But if there is ever a time where he's inspired or I'm inspired to think of a voice or an artist or, you know, a certain cadence that somebody might capture for a song or a feature, then that's when that'll come into play, you know? And at that point, I think we pretty much do a job of letting the artists be themselves with us. You know, yeah. I think that does a good job of showing what Marlo does differently and how it works together, you know, with other styles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's one on here that's, I know it's only a minute and something long or whatever, but the Eddie Appetite's Bulletproof Steering Wheel is going to probably get a lot of people who listen to this album. That's going to be one of the more memorable tracks on this, because it's basically like it's kind of like a stand-up track in the middle of the rap album. And like, I sat there and listened to this a bunch just because there's the requests that this phantom person has asked for their Honda Accord is you know, it gets increasingly more outrageous but you have this guy who's at the shop who's just kind of very calmly saying, you know, like, I don't know, I've never heard of this, I know, whatever, but if you could call me back, that would be great, you know. Where was the idea behind that?
I'm gonna tell you like this, that could not have been made had me and LaRange not been together at the time, like, because the original Eddie Appetite from the first Marlo, that was all pretty much a freestyle off the top. I think we had finished recording the album and we were trying to get some bits for the end, and L was like, yo, he played this beat and was like, yo, yeah, just do whatever, throw that on. And I said something, I said something about like the Gators, you know, and stuff. He was like, yeah, yeah, go with that. Keep going, keep going. And, you know, we went from there. And when we came back to do it again, it's just that same energy. We wanted to bring Eddie Appetite back because he had been in all the other albums. But, man, I got to give it – basically, I got to give it all to L, you know. The inspiration came from him. Had we not been together having fun, that would have never got made that way.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love Eddie Appetite. No, nobody else – I'm glad you like Eddie Appetite. Nobody likes Eddie Appetite.
What do you mean like nobody Eddie likes Appetite?
What's that?
What do you mean nobody likes me?
I've never heard. I mean, I think I may have heard one person in my life ever tell me they like Eddie Appetite. And then every time we do an album, we're like, are we doing this again? Like, yeah.
They're gonna like him now, I have a feeling, because this is a unique track for sure.
I worked hard on this track. I put in a lot of legwork on the production on this track. So hopefully
I even love the, like, you know, we're calling for the, and it's got that, it's like it's, you know, it's censored out the name or whatever, and it's like the you know, whatever. Man, there are a lot of great tracks on there. The Godfist track is great. There's there's so many on here that I've listened to like 100 million times already. I've listened to the album 4 times, but I've listened to those songs like several million times. So yeah. Jeremy, you got anything
else? I do. So let's talk about movies for a second. Not the big recommend, but what are some, I know, LaRange, last time you were on the show, a different show, and it was years ago, but we talked entirely too long about a Christmas movie that you love, Jingle All the Way. But what are some of your favorite movies in general? What are some movies you've seen or TV shows you've seen recently that you are really digging?
My favorite movies of all time. My favorite movie is Being John Malkovich. That's my favorite movie.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Good choice.
I'm a big fan of that movie. I also, you know, there's a lot of, like, I like a lot of kind of nostalgia and stuff that kind of references nostalgia and all that, you know. But in terms of TV, you know, I have been really absorbed in the underrated genre of low stakes, pseudo competition, semi-educational television shows. So aside from the competition, you know, I had my whole perspective on everything changed when somebody told me about Pawn Stars. So the show Pawn Stars is a show I've watched. I'm not loyal. I don't love it. It's not top five all time, but I've seen it and I really enjoyed it. But somebody broke my brain. Somebody broke my brain because I don't know if you've ever seen the show, but they have like little, it's like a trivia show. You know, yeah. It's like people, I think I've seen some hate on it because, like, it, you know, it's kind of campy and it's not history, but you know, it's trivia, right? Trivia is more fun than history. Mm-hmm. And so it broke my brain because they have these little skits in between the little pawn things where it'll be like who drank all the creamer? And then it'll be like, guy, like just holding the creamer, right? And then he's like, whoops. And then they move on. And I had somebody, and I love those skits. I love them, right? And somebody told me somebody told me a while ago that they were like, yeah, but you know that's fake, right? And I'm like, what does that mean? And they're like, it's not real. And I'm like, what do you think Seinfeld was real? Like, what are you talking about? He's like, and he goes, no, but it's supposed to be reality TV. And my brain just broke in half because the whole reason I love this show was because I was like, what a unique opportunity to really display some like B theater, like campy skits. Like, I thought the whole premise was that they were just like doing like borderline improvising, like stupid. Dude, like the concept of that show is that it's a fly in the wall of a pawn shop.
Right.
Oh my God. The fact that that's good. That broke my brain. That I was like, this was so much better as like a campy B movie then as reality television, it's so good. Anyway, that was not planned or intentional, but that is something I've thinking about a lot lately.
No, that's good. That's I used to watch me some Pawn Stars all the time. What about you, Solon? What's your favorite movies or shows?
I mean, I'm gonna say this all time. If you've ever heard of "Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood,"
yep.
I know a lot of people, man, you know, laugh at that movie. It's just a spoof or whatever. But really, a lot of the things that they touch on, a lot of the things that they joke about, that you do it for a reason. And that shit was my life. And it is hilarious to see it, you know. And I'm with my fam and all my homies. You know, we joke about it. There's one-offs from that movie. I like a lot of things like that. I like a lot of satires, you know, any kind of like... socially relevant comedy, you know, I like that. Recently, I will say I was blown away from Anything and Everywhere All at Once at one time, everywhere. That movie was actually very impressive. Because you know, we've all had our take on the whole multiverse thing, but to actually see it did out. I mean, you know, you've heard that movie made me laugh, it made me cry, it made me call my mama. That movie made me do all of that stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, I want a series right now that I can get into. You know, mostly I'll be making music and thinking about music and thinking about raps. If I sit down with a good show, it's like something that it's something nice and quick. I watch American Dad from time to time. You know,
just
completely silly that you don't have to invest a lot of time in.
You know what? Mm-hmm. He and I are basically saying the same thing right here, which is I think he nailed it because like. When I watch TV, my wife watches these like real heavy, good shows, you know, and she watches them without me. And I'll just kind of come in and out where she'll be watching, you know, House of Dragons or, you know, these like long form, very deep, you know, kind of shows that I know are good and I know are better than what I watch.
Right.
But like, I don't have room in my brain for emotionally investing myself in TV or nor do I have time. Like, that's why I am almost kind of preferring movies is because I can enter and exit without, you know, keeping this up here all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I'm like looking to emotionally invest myself in something, it's in my own thing, which is kind of a weird little byproduct of like being professionally creative, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm very similar. Like I watch either, TV's on in my office constantly. Part of that's because I have tinnitus and it helps fight that ringing in my ears. But I either have like The Martian, a movie I've seen 50 times, or some kind of marathon of Friends or Seinfeld that I can look at, laugh at a joke, and go back to whatever I'm doing on the computer because I don't want to invest my entire headspace for an hour into like a House of the Dragons, at least not during the day, maybe at night when I'm winding up.
That's exactly when I'm working, I always have a show on in the background. That's why these like Pawn Stars or, you know, Storage Wars or these things that are just super low stakes. But like
The Martian is that Matt Damon flick, right?
Yeah.
Martian, yeah. Good.
Yeah, I mess with that. Sci-fi. I'm sci-fi heavy too.
Yeah. See?
Leprechaun, all that stuff. Yeah.
That's my comfort movie, man. I love that thing.
Well, that's a good segue probably
into
the big recommend for this episode, which is Leprechaun 3.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company. Serving collectors since 1945.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
I am excited to talk about this, but Salem, this is your movie that you recommended to all of us. I want to hear you talk about this movie and what got you into this, what made you pitch this movie.
Ladies and gents, if you didn't enjoy watching Leprechaun 3, I hope you still enjoyed the ride at least. Now, this movie was Big for me, not just because of my childhood, but because, as I said before, I love spoof movies. And who the hell would think of making a magical leprechaun murderer? Now, this is the third one. It's big stakes, just like that Marlow 3. It's big stakes. They took it to Las Vegas. And I think this was the first joint. I don't know if this joint went to, I don't know if it went straight to VHS, because that's what they had back then. They had to make a lot of cheese off this movie. Now, I saw this shit when I was 6 years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Now, I want y'all to think. 6 years old. Now, quick flash to all the gore that you see. Quick flash to all the blood and all the blowing up and all the fingers getting ripped off and eyes getting gouged out. Quick shot to that and think about a six-year-old.
I'm thinking about the six-year-old. Six-year-old me would have been running out of the door for sure. Are you? What about you? Were you just sort of staring at it and watching it?
I watched the whole thing because you can't not watch it. I mean, it's got a lot of lights and stuff. It's a magical leprechaun. It moves fast. It goes from here to there. So it's got a lot for a kid. And yeah, I watched the whole thing, man. I was traumatized for quite a long period.
Okay. I was wondering about your soul there. I think this was before 6 years old. You definitely didn't know stuff wasn't real on screen, you know, like,
right.
I'd seen somebody bite somebody's ear, like this, I would have been out the door.
Yeah, that was wild. And now, you know, him being violent and ripping people's stuff off, that was wild. I was like, man, he couldn't do that to me because he's too tiny. But what got me, was he is magical. Mm-hmm. He can poof. Yeah. He just made fire appear. And I was thinking to myself, if he comes at me, I cannot fight that. He'll be happening, and then he'll be on your front door. He'll be on your chest, you know. And then I started thinking, man, he probably got some superhuman strength, you know. Who knows what this dude can do? If you watch the movies, they switch up his powers every single time.
Yeah, I mean, just on that note, real quick, that's a good segue into my observation that Leprechaun can create life from TVs and prostitutes. I don't know how this format normally goes, whether we normally just jump into two-thirds of the way of the movie, but that scene... I'm so confused by it. It was totally unnecessary. Why did he create a prostitute? And then like, he was like kind of like having sex with that dude with his, like as an avatar.
Yeah.
Like he created a prostitute, like a real human prostitute person.
That came out of a TV, like The Ring.
And then at a certain point he like starts making a commercial for himself, like on the TV And in that moment, I know it's important to remember that this movie is about watching a movie, right? This movie is not about the world of this movie. It's about the experience of watching that movie. But in my, I know this is too much, but I'm sitting there going like, so dude can create life. He is clearly like sexually curious. He is like absurdly bad at using his powers. I mean, that's probably the weirdest part. It's like, I mean, dude could just be like, it reminds me of you remember in X-Men Apocalypse where the very first scene he like turns people to sand.
Yes.
And then like the rest of the movie he's like shooting beams and stuff where I'm like, why don't you just use the sand thing? Like
you're right, because see, I thought that too. I was like, yo, why can't you just make fire happen all the time? You know, poof your goat right to you. They explain it, and the further he is away from the goal in this movie, the further he is away from the goal, the less power he has.
Okay, well then let me throw this out here, because this entire movie took place in like a half a square block.
Yes.
Right? and so at this point, when he's creating life in a hotel room, he is as far away from his goal as he could possibly be within the confines of this movie.
And so, man, maybe the hotel room was next to a window, man.
From like, while his shit is in a safe, you know, in there. I mean, like, I mean, if that's him nerfed, if he's nerfed because he's not doesn't have a gold in the hotel room creating prostitutes, then I mean, I think he could turn people into sand. That's all I'm saying.
I tell you, the punchline of this entire scene to me is that once this prostitute turns into a robot,
Why?
They decide that the robot still has boobs on it.
Yes, he did.
It's all metal. It's all Terminator, like it's like faux Terminator, but the boobs are still there just in case, you know, you were like, man, where'd the boobs go? You know,
my wife was gone last night while I was watching this movie, and she texted me, I'm on my way home, about 9 minutes before that scene. And I was really just watching it the whole time going, I know she's going to walk in right now. I'm going to have to explain the whole context of this movie. And like, I'm going to have to explain why this robot has boobs. And I couldn't really do it. Then it electrocutes him, which.
Of all the things, right?
Of all the things,
I'll tell you what, I got about halfway through the movie and I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Why does a 90-minute movie have this many storylines? But once main dude got bit and started turning into a leprechaun himself, I turned around completely. That saved the movie for me completely. And I think that brought that actor to life. Like, I think he was having so much fun.
I called Solemn halfway through this movie and I was going, why did they cast this dude? He is terrible at everything. And then he turned into the leprechaun, and I was like, oh, that's why.
He's great once he turns into the leprechaun. And by that point, I started laughing at everything that had previously been making me, you know, scratch my head. It all just became very fun to me.
The very first thing he does is try to get potatoes. And I'm like, this kid. It's the very first thing he does when he turns into a leprechaun.
Yes.
So this John Gatton's, who is the main guy in this, ends up being like a somewhat decently respected screenwriter. After all of this, he doesn't act too much longer after this movie. Flight is his biggest movie that he writes. After this.
Wow.
But he wrote a few others that you've heard of, like Real Steel and let's see, what else?
I love Real Steel.
I think he wrote Kong Skull Island. Let's see, what else did he have on here? The Power Rangers movie, Need for Speed, and Coach Carter, Hardball, and Summer Catch. All of those.
Oh, wow.
He did pretty well for himself.
I like when he found the dude in the pawn shop and he goes, oh no, I thought I was having a bad day.
Exactly. He sees a dead body.
That's not how people react. He found a dead body, and that's how he says. And then he gets on the phone and goes, hello, police? Yeah, I found a dead body. What? Yes, I'm sure.
Earlier, he calls the hotel manager and he says, I'd like to report a leprechaun.
That was right after he just got robbed.
Hit by a leprechaun and all this, and then he's like, yeah, no, a leprechaun is what I'm gonna do.
Tiny green person.
He stabbed him in the dome. He stabbed him right here and then threw him out a window and then called hotel services about it.
Yeah, he doesn't even hesitate. Like most people, when they talk about leprechauns, most people that I know that talk about leprechauns, they have to hesitate a bit and say, you're probably not gonna believe this. But this guy is like, you guys know the concept of leprechauns. You've seen leprechauns before. There's one here running around the hotel right now. And there's,
Well, listen, man had a whole leprechaun mixtape in his drawer. And that's how they learned all about the leprechaun powers.
That's right.
He just pulls out a CD-ROM and it has everything. Yeah. Everything he needs to know.
And you know what, though? It was a pawn shop, so that's why I allowed it. I was like, that would be the place to have some leprechaun intel.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
He knew right where it was.
Is that guy in the beginning who brings the leprechaun statue to the pawn shop? Is he from the previous movie?
No, there's no continuity involved. The statue appears out of nowhere. That dude appears out of nowhere. Leprechaun blows up in Leprechaun 2. They don't know how to bring him back. So this is the first time the statue is introduced.
Oh, wow.
Now, some of the weaknesses was the same, but man, they mixed up all the rules in this one. It was all about Las Vegas for this one.
If you watch the first 90 seconds of this and then just pause it, it's the most weird interaction where the dude comes in with a statue and the guy goes, I will give you $5 for this. And he goes, whoa, 20. And then he goes, oh, 10. And he goes, okay.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did it for 20 bones. He did 10.
It's basically he's just trying to get this dude out of his shop. Like, how much? It's not so much how much do I want to pay for the statue. How much will get you out of here is basically what it comes down to.
Now that I know that dude wasn't in previous movies, why not just start with the guy who has it in his pawn shop? Like, why do we just see him buying it for $5?
They want to be able to go back at some point and make Leprechaun 2.5 that's why they did it. So they can tell the story in between and how that man came to be in possession of the statue.
I am so upset that dude's not from previous Leprechaun movies. I'm sorry. I really thought he was.
Well,
what about my shop owner, man? First thing, this dude get his ear bit off, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets his toe also bit off. He gets his toe bit off and he's like, ah. I probably should have got a better reaction, but keep rolling,
keep rolling.
Yeah. And then he's like, he doesn't go to the hospital. He bandages it up. He bandages it up. He's like, okay, I'm about to go get this leprechaun.
Yeah,
the first thing he says is, he's like, I'm going to get him. I'm like, that is not a human.
So he goes to get him, and then he gets shot in the arm with an arrow. And then just like pulls that joint out, like, yep. Oh man.
So there's a lot of really there's some decently fun characters, even though there's a lot of stereotype type stuff going on in this, especially that shop owner. But Tammy, played by Lee Armstrong, she apparently stopped acting after this movie. And wait, I don't know if it means this movie caused her to stop acting, or if it was just like, I'm done, and I was already on the cliff, and now Leprechaun 3's happened, and now
where the casino owner's like, you're never gonna work again in this town. And she didn't.
I was trying to fill my wife in on this last night, and I told her, I was like, yeah, there was a dude who like kind of almost accidentally sexually assaulted this person. And she goes, what does accidentally sexually assaulted mean? And I go, that's the right question. But trust me, I can explain it. He was a bad dude because he fired her. But other than that, he was a victim. And also, he was a victim because he didn't know that he could make wishes when that happened. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
He like found her. Also, and this is real nitpicky, but like I see why the writers did this, and I'm not saying that I would have liked it differently, but there's no reason that she should have stopped wanting him. None of the wishes ceased becoming true when the coin got taken.
Yeah, like, that's the only one, isn't it?
The money, the dude girl wished for beauty, she kept the beauty. The dude wished to be the greatest magician ever, which had no payoff.
he doesn't use it at all.
No.
None. And then the dude, and he wished that she wanted him, and then all of a sudden she like snapped out of it, which
That wasn't really, I was sitting there thinking the same thing. Like it seemed like one of them may have gone away, and maybe the main guy's luck went away when he got the coin taken from him. I'm not sure, but
luck did go. Well, I don't know.
It does seem like like they kind of like didn't have an answer for that character of Loretta,
he didn't wish for luck. He wished to be back in the casino on a winning streak.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Was the fulfilled.
So he got it done. Yeah.
Yeah.
But though the Loretta character who wanted to be beautiful, I kept thinking, well, once his coin was taken away from her, she was just going like everything was going to revert back to. But they sort of like gloss that over because Leprechaun shows up magically, of course, to her. I don't know how he knows where the coin is at any one time, because a lot of times he's just sitting. A lot of the movie is him asking where the coin is, but then
he shows up
magically wherever the coin is. So I don't know.
He's also always showing up at the wrong place, saying that he knows where the coin is.
Right,
he's
like just before. Like where just before that, it got taken up.
Listen, he's sniffing the coin. He's like picking up the scent like a dog, you know. So he's coming just a second too late. But that's why he goes to my guy's room and bites him in terms of a leprechaun. The coin was just there. Fazio took it.
Yeah.
That's why he went to the guy who got electrocution banged.
But if he had just walked to the room instead of teleporting, he would have passed Fazio.
He Leprechaun. First off, you got to understand, Leprechaun do it for the kicks, okay? That's why the chick actually came out of the TV. That's why he was doing commercials. He was gambling for a little bit when he first came in the casino.
Yeah.
He was he was taking money from, he put doo-doo in my man's hand, you know?
Talk about some weird stuff, man. The green poop that comes out of his shillelagh?
Yeah. Now, when I was younger, I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like, I don't know, some food or something. Some leprechaun is giving to the guy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I also love how the hotel doesn't have any lockable doors. Everybody's just walking into everybody else's room whenever they want. And in that, in the casino owner's room, there are three exits. Because when the main character takes Tammy up there to confront him, they come in the main exit. And then they scurry off to the right, and the casino honcho, like, heavy guy comes in a completely separate entrance, and then we see the main characters are out on some kind of fire escape. So that room has three main entrances. That is very dangerous hotel.
This guy was obviously into some heavy stuff because he owed the mafia some money on his janky casino. So he had to have money. And if I owned that casino, I wouldn't have it any other way. I got to get in and out.
Well, and those gangsters are hilarious too, because they just walk in on that, after the aftermath of that electrocution from the robot prostitute. And they're just like, what the hell is this? Or,
that was like, what's going on? Leprechaun all in the bed and stuff. He got hit with something. Like, what is going on here?
Oh man.
Yo, what did my man say? Yo, his last words before he died, his how was it working with Judy Garland?
Judy Garland, yes. They always like every time they had a chance to throw some sort of joke, they went to that lowest common denominator thing. Those limericks are fun. I mean, they're not brilliant or anything, but they're fun overall.
I did catch myself about halfway through starting to try and predict how the limericks would end. Like, oh, he says something never. He's going to end with sever, I bet. And I was usually right because they're pretty basic. But I did enjoy the limerick, especially, again, once main character guy starts doing his own limericks about the plate of potatoes.
the potatoes one, I did not. I mean, I don't think you got penis au gratin. I don't know.
that one was not. I think Warwick Davis is sort of an unsung hero in these movies. How much credit do we? I mean, I think he's great for what these movies are. Like, we don't know. We're so, I guess, you know what Warwick Davis, who he is, because you've seen him in Willow and you've seen him in a lot of different things, but he's covered in all this makeup. And I was talking the other day, somebody thought this was like an animatronic leprechaun. I was like, no, Warwick Davis is the guy underneath all the makeup and everything doing all this. I mean, think about that kind of thing for him. He's been in Star Wars, he's been in Willow, he's been in all these movies, and now he's got, this is his own franchise. Like,
yeah,
I think he's really excellent in these things.
I think so. He's clearly having a blast.
Yeah.
There would be no leprechaun without Warwick Davis. And I always tell myself he wrote his own raps in all of these movies.
Yeah. Like, and to be able to do this for, he did it for at least six, maybe seven movies. It's, somebody's telling me it's Warwick Davis, not Warwick Davis, but anyway, it's amazing. It's just amazing his performance. We don't really consider a performance like this in a movie like this. We don't really consider it that much, but he's doing great.
Yeah,
he had to have a great time. I think he did good. I like Fazio. I think he did good.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the henchman. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Everybody else just did what
they could. Main guy, once he gets turned, I saw somebody asking about he got turned into a leprechaun, but a pawn shop owner who got bit didn't. But the difference is he made the leprechaun bleed green blood into that open wound. And that's why he turned into a leprechaun and nobody else did who got bit.
Yep.
So Caught you not paying attention right there.
Well, there you go. And we wanted it, you know. Him coming through the first two movies with all his powers, I always thought, yo, what if he ever went up with another leprechaun? And they gave it to us, you know, for a little bit. Mm-hmm. This dude ain't knew what he had, but I like how they did that. I feel like the movie wanted to be more about that than it was.
That CD-ROM at the beginning of it promised us there would be leprechauns fighting at the, like, as it said, whenever they're in the same area, they don't like each other and everything. And I was like, you better give us leprechauns fighting by the end of this. Yep. And just sure enough, they did, man. They sure enough did.
What is that pendant from another movie?
Now the pendant comes back, but okay. Before this, I don't think the pendant was a thing.
Cause they were really like promising us a pendant thing. Am I wrong? Like there was a lot of pendant interactions. And then at the end they were like, no, set the gold on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, what about this movie? Like, why does setting gold on fire impute that the gold is destroyed? Like people.
If you set gold on fire, it melts.
Because it loses its power. It's not in the leprechaun form anymore. No. He dies. Mm-hmm. It's a wrap. You know?
Yeah. We got to trust the expert here. I'm going to go with what Solemn has to say here.
Mm-hmm. See, leprechauns were made to protect the king's gold. The king had a specific gold, all right? And his insignia was imprinted on each piece. Yeah.
That's not what the CD-ROM said. The CD-ROM said that they were elves and they got too mischievous and cared about gold too much. and they ended up, which, by the way, misunderstands a lot of things about elves, about greed. I'm not super comfortable with that concept.
And elves are
taller and more slender. You know, they're not as small, but, you know.
Tammy's like, if we find that gold, we're going to destroy it. And he's like, maybe not, babe. Maybe we shouldn't. And he's already sucked in by the gold before he even finds it.
I wanted him to stay a leprechaun and use his leprechaun powers. I wanted him to actually get short, but I guess they couldn't come up with a way to do that. When they put that makeup on him and he looked in the mirror, I thought he looked the same. I thought he looked exactly. He was already looking pretty rough out there.
Oh, which reminds me, there's that amazing scene going to the hospital where the doctors are sitting there like trying to figure out what to do. And they're like, well, we'll do all the tests starting with A today, and then we'll do the one starting with B tomorrow, and then we'll start with C, and then like, well, we go golfing on Thursday. Well, this is an emergency.
Okay, we like to end our episodes with a double feature. Mm-hmm. Usually, Chris and I take turns suggesting movies, and then
not want to figure out the format, but if we have not talked about the end of this movie, I don't feel comfortable ending without discussing how this movie goes to the credits.
Okay. Let's do that.
This is the start of a beautiful friendship. They went with that as the line where they're like, wow.
We're going to do that Casablanca line and we're going to get the hell out of here.
She says, I have everything I need. No, you don't. You don't.
No, she just got fired.
Like you could argue that the whole premise of this movie is that you don't have everything you need. You don't have a car. You don't have this guy is like a pseudo leprechaun you just met. You don't have a job. You don't. Also, and this may be my own ignorance here, but are magician's assistants normally like trying to become magicians?
I don't think so, but maybe if you're an aspiring magician that has constantly been told no by sleazy club owners who are like, no, you're not going to be a magician on my watch because you have to sleep with me first, this dude was clearly. You get it whatever job you can at first. I don't think they do though, normally. No.
This woman was sexually assaulted, has no car, had to just abandon her car, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just left it.
Still on the side of the road.
Yep.
Still on the side of the road. Then she has no job. She went to the thing. She was stuck in this half block casino of hell, got attacked by leprechauns. And then the last thing she says is, I have everything I need. What? Because you found this dude who was a leprechaun 10 seconds ago? I don't. You could call him.
Hey, that dude's quite a catch. She does have everything.
You could call this movie, This Lady Does Not Have Everything She Needs. And it would That's like the one through line for every plot.
We never knew what happened to her. She never showed up ever again in the Leprechaun movie.
No, or in any movie.
Or in any movie, yeah.
She apparently did have everything she needed. I'm glad.
Hard cuts to credits.
I'm glad we let Laurent say his piece about
absolutely.
So the double features are usually movies that for some reason we see parallels. And I think Chris and I have both prepared one for today. If you guys think of one or have one, you can do that. Chris, why don't you start?
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
It's pretty tough. I ended up, this is somewhat congruent, but not all the way. But I thought of Showgirls as the double feature to this movie. The Vegas setting, the odd behavior of all the inhabitants of Vegas throughout the, you have Elizabeth Berkley who wants to become a huge star, but has to go through a lot of things that she doesn't want to go through to try to get to become that star. The length of this movie, of Showgirls, and the overall tone of Showgirls, I don't think fits very well with this movie, but there are still some parallels. I think enough parallels that it would be fun to have that.
There is that scene where she comes out of the TV to have sex with the casino owner, and then
that
turns
does
into
happen.
A robot.
Yes, that's a real weird thing that happens in Showgirls. Yes.
I originally thought of Gremlins just because it felt like these movies could be in the same universe, but I thought that was a little too easy. So I took a hard left turn and I went looking for a character who is not a good person, who is futilely chasing down somebody who has stolen something of theirs. And that person is not a good person. And I went with True Romance.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody's really very good in that movie. And, you know, the mob guys are just chasing down this money that Clarence steals early on. And there's some nudity and violence and blood. And this was very difficult for me to come up with a double feature that wasn't just Leprechaun 4, which that's when he goes to space, right?
He goes to space. Yeah, I might on the next
watch
one.
That anyway. So there's your couple of double feature options. And Chris, do we have homework for next week before we say goodbye?
Well,
to these
before
guys?
Before we go to that, Laurent Solemn, do you guys have any idea what would be a great double feature with this movie? Or are you kind of going this? I don't want to put you on the spot.
I think you hung up on Gremlins too quick, man. But not the first one. See, did Gremlins second? 2? They put it in New York, man. They pretty much do the same deals. Goofy as hell.
This is an excellent one. Yes. Yep.
Looks it up, man. I had a similar feeling when I saw the second Gremlins is when I saw Leprechaun 3. Maybe I saw them around the same time. I don't know how close they are together.
No, that's
but
a good
they're
call.
Both kind of critter movies. If Leprechaun is a critter, yeah, they both try to do it big.
I love this choice. My God, I feel bad that I didn't even come up with it on myself. But like, that's an excellent double feature with this movie. Absolutely.
Yep.
Laurent, do you have one?
I would go. I'll go with the first Toy Story.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because they're just movies kids watch when they're six.
Oh yeah. Exactly. There's a common bond here. Yeah. Hey, they both came out in 1995 as well.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. That's the thing. When I popped this Leprechaun 3 in, and the very first shot came up, I was like, oh, 1995. This came out in 1995, guaranteed.
It just looks like
Showgirls came out in 95 as well. So
wow,
there you go.
Synergy.
But, Can I ask you a general movie question that I've been – a little theory I've had recently? This just seems like the right space, you know? My theory is that the most 80s movies came out in the early 90s. That's my theory. That's the theory I'm going with. And I'm looking forward to y'all giving me a quick little feedback on that. Because every time I see something from 1990, I'm always thinking, this is the most 80s thing I've ever seen in my life. I think that we tend to associate – the last part of that era of whatever with the previous one. So like,
yeah, no, I agree. Especially if you look at music, specifically pop top 40 type music. I think the 80s actually extends to about 1992. I've actually had this conversation with a friend of mine before.
Disco happened a lot. There was a lot that moved into the early 80s that people associate with.
I think this happens with a lot of different things. Music is the same way, although there's a stark contrast with the 80s and 90s because grunge started becoming a huge thing in the early 90s. But like the pop music from the 80s to the 90s is kind of in that same, like, it's this almost, you have to guess a lot of times. Is that 88, 89, 90, 91? It's kind of in that. You guys may have an ear that's so tuned in, though, that you may not even realize, but I feel like that's the way a lot of that, we don't know what our decade is yet until it gets way farther into the decade. So I think that's a valid thing. A lot of these movies
that was my little musing for, cause I've been watching some early 90s movies lately. And every time I was like, man, this seems like this is like the most 80s thing in my life.
Okay. So next week's homework for all of you on the next Wreckatopia is going to be The Descent. This horror movie that came out in it says 2005 on the IMDb, but I believe it came out in 2006 or 2007 in the States. A movie that was so scary that I remember walking down the hall of the movie theater I was working at, and some woman came out of the theater who just could not take it anymore. That's how scary she thought that movie was. But that's going to be next week's homework.
For those of you interested, you can watch that for free on Tubi. I think that'll have ads. It's on Amazon Prime with a subscription. It's on Paramount Plus with a subscription. And it's on Sling TV and Roku with a premium subscription.
And apparently there's different endings, like the U.S. ending sucks, and there's another ending on something. So if you can find the better ending, go find that. I haven't seen this movie since it came out, so I'll need to see if I can find that ending somewhere. Anyway, thank you so much, LaRange Solemn Brigham, coming on here, talking about Marlowe 3. It comes out on October 28th. And having listened to it many times, you guys got to go out and get this album. It's really good stuff. And I wish you guys continued success with this. You guys have obviously found a groove with these albums. So,
yeah, come back for Marlowe 4. We'll do it all again.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Bye. We'll see everybody.
No peace.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.